What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? My name is Nate the Effing Great, the Paladin of Positivity, representing Wrestle Attic Radio. Be sure to follow me, Kings of the Rings Podcast, Fretzelmania Podcast, and the Young Lions Perspective as we continue to be the common cure for the wrestling podcast. We depend on bringing more positivity to this world, ladies and gentlemen. Today on Brace for Impact, I'm going to be talking about Destination X 2009. Interesting thing about the show is that going into it, there were some matches where I thought to myself, this is probably not going to end well. And to be honest, there are a couple matches that, really thinking back on them, were not exactly one of my favorites. And there are a couple stars that I look at this and I think to myself, this is not going as well as I go to. I mean, Brutus Magnus is featured on the show, and I'm not gonna lie, he definitely is one of those characters where he's just kind of there, to say the least. I'm also looking at like the match card times on here. You guys realize that there are at least five matches that don't even come close. Nope, make that six matches that don't even hit the 10-minute mark. The final three matches are the tag team title match, Ultimate X, and the TNA world title matchup that actually get more time than 10 minutes. And it's just, it's kind of frustrating looking at this. But I'll get into that when I talk about the show, which took place on March 15, 2009 in Impax, Orlando, Florida. It's home of the TNA Impact Zone. And I really do want to look at the 2009 pay-per-view for this, because in WWE, I do believe that it was either No Way Out or WrestleMania. Let me just check that out really quick here, because I actually used to do that where I would just compare the shows on here. And oh, no. This was So there wasn't a show. There was actually like a gap between Elimination Chamber and WrestleMania during this time. So even though Destination X is happening during this point, I'm actually going to mention this during the next episode that I have. It will feature the one and only Fretz from Fretzelmania. We will be talking about Lockdown. But I actually want to quickly go through the card here, because now I'm looking at this card and I just remembered, oh yeah, this WrestleMania. This was WrestleMania 25. So we had the unification match for the tag team titles, the Colognes defeating John Morrison and The Miz in a lumberjack match on the pre-show. What the hell? CM Punk defeated Christian, Finlay, Kane, Kofi Kingston, Mark Henry, MVP, and Shelton Benjamin to be the two-time Money in the Bank winner. Santino Morella, oh dear God. Now I really love TNA more at this point. I forgot about this. Santino Morella winning the Miss WrestleMania Battle Royal. Chris Jericho defeated Jimmy Snuka, Ricky Steamboat, and Roddy Piper in a handicap elimination matchup. Matt Hardy defeated Jeff Hardy in an Extreme Rules match. Rey Mysterio defeated JBL for the Intercontinental Championship. Undertaker and Shawn Michaels had a banger, with Taker coming out with the win. John Cena defeated Big Show and Edge for the world title. And Triple H versus Randy Orton retaining the WWE Championship in probably one of the most lackluster WrestleMania matches of all time, until you reach WrestleMania 32. Yay! Anyway, so with that being said, let's get into talking about Destination X 2009. So, honestly, I'm not going to really talk. I'm just going to skip doing the like opening intro packages, because there's really not much to say about them. They kind of all blend together a little bit. But during the show, this is actually going to probably take the place of it, because the fact that this is somehow a topic that needed to be talked about. So about 2 weeks before this show, actually, I think it was a little longer than that, there was a confrontation between Don West and Mike Tenay on the show, where Don West called up Mike Tenay for not sticking up for him and basically saying, like, hey, we want to keep Don West here for in TNA as a broadcast deal. So Don West has been going from kind of like a balanced deal to a heelish commentator here. There were some points where he walked out of the show, he reeked of booze, he just was mouthing off to people. It's a very interesting, and I feel like it's kind of an out of character deal for Don West. I know it is a character that he's playing. It felt weird. It really felt weird. You'd see this guy being so respectful for so long, and now he's just automatically playing a dick of a person. I just had a hard time doing that. And I also remember that around this point is when they are going to be start looking possibly for his replacement, and his replacement is going to be somebody who we'll be talking about later on. But we opened up the show with a six knockout tag team matchup, in which the Beautiful People's Angela Love, Velvet Sky, and newly added member Madison Rayne took on Roxy, Taylor Wilde, and the Governor. This matchup really came about because they're still continuing this feud between Roxy and Taylor Wilde with the Beautiful People, but they have the Governor as their kind of manager now, and Madison Rayne was kind of added in as somebody who just wanted to be a part of something more, and she definitely completed this trifecta triangle for the Beautiful People and what the original Beautiful People really were. As time has gone on, I'm watching a lot of the Impact episodes going into lockdown. My God, it is amazing watching them and seeing how Madison Rayne can just be as catty, but also as very well done as Angela Love and Matt and Velvet Sky's characters have been. It's just really awesome to see. So we have Velvet doing some shoulder thrusts to the Governor, a back kick and drop kick by the Beautiful People. That looked really good. Roxy and Taylor do a wheelbarrow senton tag team move. Love that move. It looks just absolutely great. It's just one of those things where it also, to me, says, like, okay, this is where you would definitely want there to be a knockouts tag team division, because Roxy and Taylor are just healing it here. And we get to it eventually. Madison got a stun gun on Roxy. Velvet Sky locking in an octopus hold. The Beautiful People, they isolate Roxy. And then Roxy hits a beautiful sit-out spine buster. Honestly, I think that should have been her finisher because it just looked really good. Taylor Wilde, she comes in with House of Fire, you know, knees, drop kick, tilt-a-whirl backbreaker, high cross body. The Governor does a dive onto the Beautiful People. And then Taylor Wilde hits a bridging German suplex on Madison Wynn to give Team Babyface, Governor, Roxy, and Taylor Wilde the win. I gave this one a B. I put in my notes that it was short, but it felt right. It definitely showcased everybody here. It didn't feel like it was going for too long. So I think that this was just about the right amount of time to give them. Lauren is with Jeff and Mick Foley. Jeff says that Sting is going to show where he stands tonight. And with him being the special guest referee, he's going to call it right down the middle. And then it gets funnier, because after he says that, he says the best man will win and remain world champion. Huh. He's obviously going to be unbiased. Mick says that he's going to do his job well, and he's looking forward to seeing Kurt Angle at ringside. I'm going to say this right now. This is going to be the show. This is going to be the last show where I am very tolerant of Mick Foley. After this, it's going to start going downhill, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just telling you that right now. Up next, we have Brutus Magnus versus Eric Young. Brutus Magnus, he comes out and literally says nothing. I really wish I could care about that promo. I just don't. We have a special guest ring announcer at this, Jesse Neal. Yes, some people might remember Jesse Neal. He is doing the ring announcing for this deal. He's making his debut right here. Introduces Eric Young. And we get into the matchup. Brutus hits a reverse elbow. We see Eric Young hitting an arm drag into an inverted atomic drop. He goes for a crossbody, but there just comes a point where Magnus was supposed to catch him, but it was botched. Eric Young just fell right off of Magnus. We see Magnus hit a power slam, high knee, then a leg drop, power bomb. He misses a splash. Eric Young hits a Spagingo back body drop. Death Valley driver. He does a flip into the elbow drop. He goes for it again, but Magnus uppercuts Eric Young when he gets on the top rope, and then he hits him with a top rope Piper's Pit for the win. Magnus wins. This was a C. This was nothing really too special. This was something that could have definitely been left off the card. I do not really think much of it. It just was there, I think, to kind of fill time so that way they could say, oh, hey, we can get more people on the card. Yay! Why not? No idea. So we go from that to them running down the match card. And out comes Sheik Abdul Bashir, former X Division champion. He wonders why he's not booked, whether it was involving conspiracy or race. He makes an Obama reference of Hulk. It just drags on a bit. He claims to be in the concentration camp of America, Holocaust of Americans, and then he gets emotional by saying that he's done nothing to piss everybody off. Jim Cornette says otherwise. And as soon as I saw Jim Cornette, I'm like, yay, this might be worth it. He says that he didn't book him because he doesn't like him. You know what? I'm okay with this. He says that he talks too much and he's a big obnoxious jerk. Very PC of him to say, but you know what? Okay. Basically yells at him to get out of my building. Brings out Officer Neil. Neil sings a version of like God Bless America to send Sheik Abdul Bashir away. And Sheik Abdul Bashir, he goes up the ramp. And he is out. I have an exclamation at the end where I just said, what a waste. No, this was honestly something that just made no sense putting on the show. This could have been something they kept on Impact. It just made absolutely no sense. So we go backstage, and you know what? We went from a bit of a low to a high point, ladies and gentlemen, because this is where it gets good. Kurt Angle is paranoid about Jeff Jarrett, Mick Foley, and Sting. Basically talk about how they're going to screw him tonight. There's even a promo where he talks about how it's going to be the biggest screw job since Montreal. It's like, wow, they just really cannot help it when it comes to Earl Hebner, huh? Booker T says that he's responsible for Booker T and that he is focused on AJ Styles. And this is where it peaks, ladies and gentlemen, because we get, you might have guessed it, Scott Steiner. He is literally saying that he needs to focus on, you know, make it up with Sting. And he says that, you know, he's got so much going on here. He's got a guy with a sword, a machete. We just look at him like he's a hamburger, like he's a big Twinkie. Look, I'm a genetic vegan. You know what he sees me? He sees a piece of bacon. And literally, as Scott Steiner saying this, the look on Kurt Angle's face, it is just a 1,000-yard what the fuck stare. It is one of the greatest things Scott Steiner has done. And honestly, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't even care if he's like the worst wrestler. He is not, by the way. Him talking is one of the biggest highlights of any show. And I absolutely love it. Kevin Nash tells him to relax and tells Kurt that it is his fault and to go out and do something. Kurt says, after the bell, you'll see what Sting is all about. That's about it. Up next, we have a match of 10,000 tacks between Matt Morgan and the Monster Abyss. And I also saw that there were some poles and there are tacks, bag of tacks in them. All I thought to myself was, Russo. This has Russo's handwriting written all over it. Of course it does. And I think that this is where we see the debut of Matt Morgan when he's wearing the robe out there. It's something different, but I don't know. I don't think he needs it. I really don't. Maybe it's just for his heelish character. It just kind of doesn't work for me. That robe gimmick is not doing it quite for me. But that's just me. Maybe some people love the robe. I'm not big on it. Abyss does chops. Morgan gets racked on the post. We see Abyss set up the bed of tacks on the elevation step by the ramp. Okay, so there is an elevation step where he places like these tables or these sheets of tacks on there. So he's basically planning on sending Matt Morgan into them. Elbow smashes and a splash by Matt Morgan. We see Morgan get the tacks from the pole because why not? Lays it out in the ring in a very weird spot because it's very close to the ropes for whatever reason. They decide to just put it like near the ropes. And I'm thinking to myself, if they do something there, then somebody's going to hit their head on that bottom rope. He tries to get Abyss in them, basically just trying to eat him. He's like pushing his head down, just trying to force him into that. Abyss fights him off. He hits a splash and then he hits a Umanga hip attack. Abyss gets another bag from the other pole that I just noticed after that. I was like, oh yeah, there's two of them on here. Cool. That's definitely cool. Morgan hits the carbon footprint. Matt Morgan gets the chair wedged in a corner. Matt Morgan tries to leap from the corner, but just gets kicked right in the nuts. Absolutely funny. Abyss tosses him into the chair and then grabs another bag from ringside, and it's a bag of broken glass that he puts on the tacks. Abyss goes for a choke slam, but gets countered. Goes for another choke slam onto Matt Morgan, who tries to throw him off the stage onto those two bed of tacks. He gets a low blow on the carbon footprint, sends Abyss off the stage and into the bed of tacks. And Abyss loses. Matt Morgan wins the match of 10,000 tacks. Oh, by the way, that's the rules of the matchup. You send somebody through tacks and then you win. C matchup. This was just a lot of some good spots here and there, but the freaking poles literally just reek of Russo, and it made no sense in there. There's just so many weird spots involved in this matchup that all I thought to myself was, why is this matchup so not only kind of boring, but why is it also just nothing really? This should be a matchup where you're just like, oh, hey, Abyss and Matt Morgan, it's a blood feud. These guys hate each other. They're former tag team partners. It just feels like a lot of nothing right now. Hoping that changes, but we'll see. Booker T, he goes backstage to Jim Cornette, basically stating that he doesn't... oh, God, this segment. He's basically saying that he doesn't want to put his Legends title on the line. Charmel tries to get him out of it, basically stating like, you know, what were you in the right state of mind? Were you in a, you know, were you pressured? Stuff like that. And Booker T's like, yeah. He does this weird, awkward pause deal. But Jim Cornette says that, no, it's signed, it's sealed, it's going to happen tonight. And basically, Booker T's just threatening to sue him, stuff like that. And Jim Cornette says, if you can resurrect Johnny Cochran, we can talk. I'm guessing that's a that's a reference to a good lawyer, something like that. Who the hell knows? I didn't do my research on Johnny Cochran, so it's just one of those things where I'm like, this is a reference by Jim Cornette. I'm just going to leave it be. We get the finals of One Night with ODB. And honestly, you guys, I just saw the segment where it was that One Night with ODB deal. And I'll talk about that after this is over, because this segment was crazy. So we have ODB in heels and a blue dress. I almost wanted to say it was like a very jean-like dress, but it just, I think it was just the color scheme. It just looked like it was a jean style. But I was digging it. I thought that ODB looked really good in it. We get Krusty the Drummer at ringside. Krusty the Drummer is just some guy who on ODB's talk show, ODB's Angle, is just kind of there doing like, whenever there's like an innuendo, he does like, kind of deal. That's kind of why he's there. They mentioned that there were like thousands of men in AODB mentioned and a few ladies that wanted her. And all I thought to myself was, okay, this is funny. That's great. So the final three are Cody Deaner, Shark Boy, and Bernie Weber. I have no idea who Bernie Weber is, but as soon as I saw the first two, I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting. But basically, Bernie Weber is just a guy who's like super rich, and he's like, oh, I can treat you well, and blah, 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 that kind of deal. So we get the men asked a question of why do they deserve a hot, steamy night with ODB? And I just noticed that when I put with, I spelled it with a U instead of an I, so it's like with ODB. Cody Deaner says that he can get it done in 60 minutes. What does it mean? Use your imagination. Meanwhile, Shark Boy says that he can get it done twice in 22 to 25 minutes. And I thought to myself, damn, that's really good. I think that one of the funniest things is that Shark Boy has this line where he basically says, like, you ever been eaten by a shark before? And I'm just like, oh my God, this is so stupid, but this is really good. And Weber basically is just like, oh, I have money. Apparently, Krusty also gets paid per rim shot. Or I think that's what JB was made a joke about. But then we have a dance-off where basically ODB is going to watch these guys, you know, break out moves, stuff like that. Bernie says that he has more moves than Octomom Got Babies. Yeah, okay, whatever. And I literally just have like all these random things where it's like, what the fuck are these moves? Literally, I'm just like thinking, why even try? Meanwhile, Shark Boy, he's doing some great moves. He's just literally killing on the dance floor. He is literally doing like spins and dance moves, stuff like that. And he had a line where he said, you got finned shell, yeah, bitch. And I thought to myself, oh my God, this is amazing. Cody Deaner dedicates his dance to Dale Earnhardt Jr. I don't know if he was dead at this point. I don't think so. I think that's what makes it funny. But he dances really cringy style. Like, I was literally looking at this like, wow. I didn't think that Weber would have better moves, but he has better moves than Deaner. And then Cody makes a comment where he said, jeez, I'm realizing right now that I'm saying Cody, and some people might think Cody Rhodes. No, Cody Deaner. Deaner says that his hair is not the longest part of his body. Fans are basically being told, hey, cheer for who you like. Who do you think should get it? Should it be Bernie? Nope. Should it be Shark Boy? Yeah. People are just going crazy. Like, yeah, Shark Boy. And there's Cody Deaner. It's like, oh, yeah, he's okay. He's okay. He's funny, but he's okay. And basically, ODB picks who she wants, and she picks Cody Deaner. And I'm amazed. I literally am like, wow. So in addition to Daniel Bryan almost getting screwed at WrestleMania 30, Cody Rhodes getting screwed at WrestleMania 39. I have to mention the fact that Shark Boy got screwed at Destination X 2009. Do I think that this is a story that needs to be finished? No. But it's definitely one of those things where, like, they loved Shark Boy. Shark Boy was so over with the people. Vince Russo, I'm pretty sure you made this a freaking thing. Pretty sure you were the one that had the idea behind it. All I can say is fuck you. Anyway. Beer Bunny is backstage with Lauren. They call her stupid and a bitch. And they talk about... they're tired of all the talks of the title wins that Team 3D do. That they should run back to Japan. That they're getting no respect. They don't care about the fans or management. And that Team 3D is going home. Oh, before I get too deep into this, I forgot to mention that I was going to talk about the One Night with ODB deal. So they end up going to Universal Studios. There's a deal where Cody Deaner loves Woody Woodpecker. So it goes on one of the rides, and then there's a deal with like a Jaws deal, funny deal, and basically they have like a fun time there. I say time because it was supposed to be one night with ODB, and yet it was during the daytime. So already false advertisement. What the hell? Honestly, I think that Shark Boy would have been a better pick for Universal Studios. I'm just saying. We go into our next matchup, which is for the TNA Knockouts World Championship, as Awesome Kong defends against Sojourner Bolt. This was an interesting matchup. And the reason why this is happening is because Sojo won a gauntlet matchup to get the Knockouts title win. And it was basically that point where where basically Sojo and Raka Khan are like, oh, you're not happy for us? Well, we don't like you anymore. So therefore, we're out of the Kongtourage. That's kind of it. There's really not much more than that. Sojo hits some drop kicks, another botched crossbody moment. I mean, what the hell? How hard is it to catch somebody who hits a crossbody? Seriously. Kong hits and tosses Bolt. And during this match, Bolt is just selling so well. I'm literally watching this and I'm thinking to myself, man, she's like the Dolph Ziggler of the Knockouts division. She is just selling so well. She's going great. I loved it. We see Kong lock in a sleeper hold and she's just spinning her around, just tossing her around, hits a choke slam. She goes for a splash, but misses it. And it looked like when she went off with the splash, where instead of going like straight, where she would have probably hit her, it looked like she went in a weird direction, like the wind pushed her or something. So I was literally like, okay, that's interesting. Sojo gets a La Magistro and a jackknife pin for some close victories. Bolt is able to throw Kong out of it, hits a double axe handle. She goes for a Hurricane Rana back in the ring, but unfortunately, Awesome Kong counters it, hits the Awesome Bomb for the win, and retains. I give this one a C. It had some moments of promise. The botch definitely does hurt the matchup a little bit, but Sojo definitely was showing that she could go, that she was a great worker. So I was very happy with that. I don't think this will be the last time that we see the two of them fight against each other, but I thought this was really good. Up next, we have Samoa Joe versus Scott Steiner. Samoa Joe came back after Steiner and the members of the Main Event Mafia basically broke his arm, or at least that's what it seemed like. And Samoa Joe has come back, and he is describing that he's got this nation of violence that he's going to utilize to destroy the Main Event Mafia. And this is his first matchup back officially. So we see Samoa Joe, he's got new gear. Instead of doing like the like trunks, he now does like full pants with like a leopard kind of skin deal to it. It's a weird, different deal that he does. And he's also got, you guessed it, the crooked penis face paint. I mean, let's face it, it looks bad. Samoa Joe, not even gonna let them finish up the introduction. He goes in. He is on the attack on Scott Steiner. During that point, he busts open Scott Steiner, hits a T-bone. Scott Steiner is able to hit a complete shot. He gets the pipe. Joe is just kicking the shit out of Scott Steiner and preventing him from using that pipe. He is literally just like going to town on him. But then he uses the pipe and he assaults the referees, and I don't mean just like a little grazer. He is just shoving them around, just punching them, going crazy, and that is enough for the DQ loss for Scott Steiner victory, Samoa Joe loss. Honestly, I gave this one a B. It was one of those things where I'm like, okay, the thing is that Scott Steiner at this point, he definitely could have used a victory. But also, you can't just have Samoa Joe lose on his way back. So instead, what made more sense was to have this deal basically be like Samoa Joe was not going to be winning the wrestling match. He just wanted to beat the ever-living hell out of Scott Steiner. And honestly, it made the most sense to me. It's just one of those things where, like, he's not concerned about winning a wrestling match. He's more concerned about just beating up these guys. And honestly, I hate the fact that it's at the expense of a referee. But at the same time, it was one of those things where I thought this was actually really cool to see Samoa Joe back in that mindset where he is just there to just destroy, destroy, destroy. Joe doesn't dive onto Scott Steiner. He tosses him in the crowd. He's just biting him, tossing him around. He's just beating him up all over the crowd area, sends him to the back. And we kind of move on from there. AJ is with Lauren. AJ says the time for talk. There's a time for talking and a time for shutting up. He shows gratitude to Team 3D and Rhino, but he wants to fight Booker alone. And that tonight's not about the money, cars, houses. He does what he does because he loves it, basically is what he's saying. And honestly, this is a bit of an interesting change in the AJ attitude, but at the same time, as well as things where I'm like, you know what? I actually do like that basically what we have is AJ Styles trying to be a guy who's just going out there fighting the Main Event Mafia on his own. He is literally there just ready to take down anybody that comes at him, and he wants to be his own man. I mean, he still wants to represent TNA, kind of wants to represent the front line, but he wants to really show that he can do this. So, which brings us to the next matchup, AJ Styles versus Booker T for the TNA Legends title. At the start, a great back and forth between these two guys. Honestly, guys, this is a matchup that I think Booker T would say, hey, in TNA, if I want to showcase a good matchup that I've done, this is one of them. It really is. I really enjoy this matchup. We get an AJ dropkick, an apron forearm. Booker T does a stun gun to stop AJ Styles' momentum. Does a nice spin kick. Booker T really knows how to do a great spin kick. We get a key lock. By Booker T. And we see AJ Styles. He's just trying to get out of this. He's doing everything that he can. He even tries to do a Samoan drop on Booker T. But Booker T is just holding on for ever-loving life. And honestly, I was literally like, wow, not only is this showcasing AJ's strength, but Booker T's got some resolve. I really like that. AJ Styles, he fights back out of the hammer, out of the key lock. He does a hammerlock back suplex, which, oh God, the moves looks really good. Booker T's sidekick. AJ Styles locks in a full Nelson and then a bridging German suplex, which gets a two count. Booker T catches AJ Styles with a kick and he stops the forearm. This one looked a little bit messy, but at the same time, it was one of those things where I'm like, okay, this was supposed to be a really good spot. I think it would have been. An axe kick is countered into a Pele kick, and then AJ Styles picks up Booker T, hits a Styles clash for the win. AJ Styles celebrates in the crowd as he is the new TNA Legends champion and the first ever TNA Grand Slam champion. This matchup got to be. Honestly, this was a really fun match between two veterans. Like I said, this is Booker T's best match in TNA by far. He definitely got a chance to showcase what he was truly all about, and he got a chance to really have a really good title defense here, but obviously it wasn't meant to be because AJ Styles came out victorious. Lauren is with who I called Dirty Joe, and I say that because he had, like, it seemed like dirt all over him, and then he has his, like, machete sword, blade, whatever it is, on there, and he's got, like, a little, like, trickles of blood on there. And basically Samoa Joe says that Scott Steiner knows about his Nation of Violence, and he's going to take down the rest of the Mafia. I'm going to tell you this right now. For 1 week, they literally had Scott Steiner, like, cover up his face with the hooded Main Event Mafia deal. And then the following week, they just dropped it. So he wasn't beaten up that bad. If they would have maybe had, like, some kind of deal where Scott Steiner maybe had, like a bandage or something like that, or there was, like, some kind of deal where he's been, like, he had some, like, slight disfigurement, something like that, If they would have just played into it somehow, it would have been cool, but they didn't. It was just like one of those things where like, oh, he got beat up by a sword, but he's totally fine. He's totally fine. I swear. It's just some of this booking was really bad. All right, we got the TNA World Tag Team Championship Off the Wagon Challenge as Team 3D challenges Beer Money. So over the last month, Beer Money have been doing this Off the Wagon Challenge, in which, in exchange for them putting their tag team titles on the line, they'll face any team, but whoever gets pinned in that matchup. Basically, if the team win, if the opposing team wins, they win the tag team titles. If Beer Money wins, whoever they pin, they are fired from TNA. So that is essentially what is going on here, is that if Team 3D gets pinned, one of them is going to be fired. Already they had two people that were out of it, which were Petey Williams, when he reunited with Eric Young to form Team Canada, came very close to winning the tag titles, but it wasn't meant to be. And the other one was the Rock and Rave Infection, in which Lance Hoyt was pinned and he was fired. They were gonna see, it almost seemed like LAX was gonna be next on dock, but Beer Money, they got disqualified against them, so nobody lost their job. Then Team 3D had the challenge, basically saying, hey, we know what you're trying to do here, but how about you face one of the best tag teams in all the world today? So that is how this matchup came about. Beer Money with the early advantage, and they're just getting in the heads of Team 3D, like doing some early pin predicaments where it seems like they're coming so close to ending one of their careers. Ray gets Storm to do a dance with him first for comedy, and then hits him with a neck breaker. We get a double flapjack by Team 3D, a sidewalk leg drop. Love that move. Sidewalk slam into a leg drop. There we go. They go for the what's up attempt, but it gets thwarted. Beer Money hits a double suplex, and then they do their cheer of Beer Money. Ray hits a hip toss and then a Spogingo back body drop. Corner splash gets oh Jesus. So there's a corner splash which gets Beer Money incorporated into a compromising position. And by compromising, I mean one of them lands on all fours, the other one lands behind them. I'll let you paint that picture yourself. We get a Uranage to Rude by Ray, the dusty elbows to Storm. Rude hits a blockbuster. Storm hits a Frankensteiner to fight back. We get a splash by Rude, a Bubba Bomb to Rude. Storm spits in the face of Rude accidentally. And then we see Rude get hit with a 3D 2.2, which is that back suplex neck breaker deal. Storm, he hits him with the chair to cause a disqualification. Jim Cornette says, no, that's not going to happen. We're going to restart the matchup with no disqualification. As they're talking about this, Ray has James Storm's cowboy hat on, which looks very funny. We get a 3D onto Storm. One, two, Rude pulls the referee out of the ring. Beer Money, with Rude having James Storm on his shoulders, goes to the table, grabs the belt, and walks out, and they get a count out. A count out and a no disqualification matchup. To tell me how much that makes sense. So Team 3D win via count out in the no disqualification matchup. Even Ray thinks that this one is BS. He even says during the matchup. I give this one a B. Other than the finish, which probably would have made it an A, this matchup was really good. I really did enjoy this matchup. It definitely did feel like the weight of Team 3D was just put on them and the pressure was put on. And really basically stated that, hey, they're going to just go out there, do everything they can, and they were going to make sure that nothing was, they have no regrets with that matchup. Well, the only regret is that they didn't win. That's basically what I can put for that. Up next, we have the Ultimate X match for the X Division Championship. Chris Sabin versus Jay Lethal versus Consequences Creed versus champion Alex Shelley versus Suicide, who's making his TNA debut. Now, Suicide, for those that don't know, was a character that was in the very iconically interesting game, TNA Impact, the game. He was the featured character of the story mode. Honestly, guys, I feel like that the Impact game is not as bad as people remember it being, but it's one of those games that I think a lot of people kind of want to sweep under the rug, just kind of forget about it. I kind of enjoy it. Motor City Machine Guns talk about the Ultimate X and how they want to keep the title in Detroit. Lethal Consequences, they're ready to win. Suicide, he doesn't get any promo time. And honestly, I feel like when we get promo time from him, it's going to be a car crash. I hate to say it. The Guns double team everybody early. Show their, you know, like I said, they're basically trying to be like, hey, we want to make sure that the title stays within the tag team. Suicide counters Lethal's hip toss drop kick. During the matchup, we get a Fallen Angel chant, and I think that is because a lot of people know that Christopher Daniels was filling in for Kaz, who had like a minor injury, I believe it was, during the when he was Suicide. So Christopher Daniels kind of filled in for that. Shelley hits a knee facebuster. We get the ego trip, which is that suplex neck breaker by Chris Sabin. Both Shelley and Lethal miss the dives. Chris Sabin did a T-miss, which I'm trying to remember what that meant. But I think he missed a dive too. Suicide picks Creed onto his shoulders, and he's on the apron, and he does a Green Bay plunge to everybody on the outside. That was one of those moments where I'm like, okay, that's a cool spot. Creed hits a springboard bulldog to the Guns, Lethal Combination to Suicide by Jay Lethal. Creed speared Sabin as he jumped off of Shelley. Tower of Doom spot. Looks like it's going to be hit by everybody, but Suicide is able to hold on to the cable all throughout this deal. Bear in mind that with them, they're just climbing on that X cable, but they're failing. Nobody's got the cable yet. Lethal does a powerbomb to Suicide to bring him down. Creed goes for the honor roll, but Sabin counters it into a German suplex. I thought that was a great spot. Another moment where everybody gets their spots in. Lethal eats a German from the top rope. Motor City Machine Guns hit a Made in Detroit, which is a sliced bread powerbomb combination. It's beautiful. It's great. Suicide Solutions to Chris Sabin. Creed hits a top rope TKO. Sabin, Creed, and Lethal are on the cables going for the titles. It looks like someone has got the win. But then Suicide, who could not make this any more obvious on who he was on one of the pillars of the X, does a dive to the center, and he knocks everybody down, gets the championship, and Suicide is your new X Division champion. Gave this matchup an A. This was a really good matchup here between these guys. It was definitely also one of those matches where it was like, oh, they got a lot of people that they're just kind of putting into this. But at the same time, it kind of made sense. You have two teams that are kind of feuding with each other, but you also have Suicide, who's just kind of like this, I guess, red herring of sorts that had to be added into the matchup. So honestly, like I said, it's a fun matchup, really good, and the X Division delivery. Also, I do want to state that after this matchup, the Motor City Machine Guns actually go to New Japan, and they actually have a matchup with the team of No Limit of a Yuro and Naito. And honestly, guys, I'm going to say this right now. Seeing Naito wrestle in this matchup, I was literally just like, oh my God, I can understand why my friend Josh loves New Japan. I can understand why he's so high on people like Naito. He's great. He's absolutely great. So we're going to the main event. We have JB with Sting. Sting's ready to defend the title and says that both he and Kurt will need to bring their A game for this. Jeff to count and Mick to make sure that it isn't truly one-on-one. So the main event is for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. We have Kurt Angle challenging Sting. Now, some people might be saying, but wait, Nate, you sexy beast. I thought that these two were on the same page. Why are they fighting each other? Well, my friend, I will tell you why. So Sting and Kurt Angle have been having this weird kind of tension between the two of them since the four-way matchup between them and Team 3D against All Odds. Kurt Angle tried to actually make Sting lie down and award the title to him, but Sting basically said, hey, dude, you know that you don't want to win this way. You should want to do it with honor, with valor. He even mentioned, like, if you would have lost to the person in the Olympics, would you have asked for a do-over? No. And he basically talks about him being, I think he kind of questions his manhood a bit, to which Kurt Angle literally says, you know what? I'm going to not only take your title, but I'm going to take your ass with it. And then they have an empty arena matchup, which honestly is really good. I actually forgot that these two actually had a matchup like this. And it's kind of one of those things where it's like, wow, this is kind of basically what it was pre-pandemic deal. And honestly, like I said, it was a really, really good match to do. Basically, it ends with Kevin trying to, you know, call them off. Basically, say like, "Hey, look, we don't want to be doing this. Want to show respect for each other and as well as for the family." Sting basically says that I'll be the bigger man. Sticks his hand out. Looks like he's getting a handshake. They do shake hands, but then Kurt Angle spits in Sting's face, and this is where it's just like, you know what? We're going to have the match at Destination X. So it's a battle truly of respect. But in addition to that, Jeff Jarrett is the guest referee and Mick Foley is the special guest enforcer. In a weird way, trying to show like, oh, there's some tension between the two of them. But also, Sting might be joining Jeff Jarrett and Mick Foley. For whatever reason. We got a hype package for both Sting and Kurt Angle, which honestly truly does make this feel like a main event. I really like this. Both of them start off by doing a nice feeling out deal between the two of them. They get some like little nice back and forths between the two. Sting throws Kurt Angle over the top ropes, and woof, does Kurt Angle get some height. I mean, literally, it looks like he was standing on the top rope when he was diving off. It was a scary spot. We get some more back and forth between the two of them. Sting hits a Stinger splash and then a suplex, which I thought was weird. He counters an Angle slam attempt, hits a shoulder bomb. By that I mean like a shoulder power bomb. And I'm thinking to myself, God, Kurt Angle is not only selling for Sting very well, but also Sting's pulling out some moves I've not seen before. Kurt counters a Scorpion death drop into a ankle lock attempt, but then he's able to get Sting into Suplex City, bitch. He hits an Angle slam. He hits a moonsault. That surprised the hell out of me. I was like, what? Kurt Angle hasn't hit a moonsault in a long time. We get some more Suplex City, but that gets countered into a Scorpion death drop. 1-2. Unfortunately, Kurt Angle kicks out of that one. Kurt hits Jeff Jarrett by mistake. We get a Scorpion Deathlock by Sting. Kurt Angle's tapping out, but nobody has seen it. Kurt Angle, he hits the Angle Slam. Mick Foley is finally getting in the matchup. Counts the 1-2, but Sting kicks out. Kurt Angle low blows Mick Foley. And then Kurt Angle decides, hey, I'm going to try and hit him with the chair. What ends up happening is that Mick stops him with the chair, but then Mick Foley goes for a chair shot on Kurt, hits Sting by mistake. Kurt hits an Angle slam to Mick Foley. Kurt covers Sting, 1-2, a kick out. And I'm thinking to myself, oh boy, this is where it's going to get really crazy, isn't it? Okay, I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of multitasking. I'm doing this show while also watching Impact, and I just saw Balls Mahoney and Spike Dudley. That's insane. Anyway, Kurt Angle, he spits on Jeff, but Sting, he's able to sting up. He beats down Kurt Angle, hits the Scorpion Death Drop for the 1, 2, 3. After some chicanery by Jeff Jarrett, and hits Scorpion Death Drop, we see Sting retain. I gave this matchup a B. It was a pretty good matchup. It had that clusterfucky kind of finish, which, to be honest, I think people kind of knew, but I think it was done pretty well because it does kind of plant the seeds of what's going to happen in the future, which I'll talk about in a minute. Overall, this show was a B show. It was not bad, but there were just some questionable decisions and also some things I feel like could have been spread out maybe a little bit more. I think, again, the Knockouts could have used a little bit more time. I think the Knockouts women's tag probably could have benefited from that time extended. Maybe the Knockouts title. But then you could also make the comment that maybe there's some other matches that could have been put on there. Best matches on there are definitely probably the final three matches, as well as the, just trying to remember the other matchup that I thought was really good. I think Samoa Joe and Scott Steiner was also one that, even though it was short, it served a purpose, and it also brought Samoa Joe back as a guy who literally just wants to beat the shit out of everybody. So, so that is, yeah, that is Destination X. Remember the next show, guys? It's going to be me for WrestleMania. We're talking about Lockdown. And one of the things I want to mention is that we're going to have the main event being Sting defending the world title against Mick Foley. And this is where the downward spiral comes for Mick Foley, because what the fuck is he doing? I'll talk more about that with Fritz when we go into talking about that match. But until then, be sure to check out our merchandise area on Spring Tees. So many great things that you could get from the people of Wrestle Addict Radio. Be sure to also listen to us on so many different formats, including Spotify. Hey, give us 5 stars. Let us know how you feel about these shows. Let us know what you think about these shows. Be sure to hit us up on social media. The main one you can definitely check out is at @addict_wrestle. Be sure to also check out the Kings of the Rings podcast, Pretzelmania podcast, and Young Lions Perspective. And be sure to check out all the other episodes that I do as part of Brace for Impact. And if you want to contact me, hit me up on the Twitter as well as on the Instagram at RealFNGame, as well as check out the Game Changer podcast where myself and Victory Bell, Tori Clark, we have been talking a lot about Disney. So be sure to check that out. It's a lot of fun. Be sure to also check out all the great content that we have for here at Wrestle Addict Radio. Be sure to also be a part of our Discord server. So really would love to hear your guys' opinions, as well as listening to your guys' thoughts on current matters in wrestling. Thank you guys so much for the Wrestle Addict Radio family. I've been Nate the Effing Great. I'll see you guys next time. Ta-ta for now.